And welcome back to the Omban. I'm Matt Ferreira.
And I'm Ezra, and today we're just going to jump into some real big news around the baseball world. I know all of us are a little mad about it, and that's Ken Rosenthal got fired from MLB Network because of his criticism of Rob Manfred, the commissioner that all of us love to hate. I think we're all pretty confused by it because Rosenthal is pretty generally loved. It's the guy that we love most in baseball fighting the guy that we really despise the most in baseball, and Rob Manfred. The New York Post was actually the first one to report that he was held off of the air for a few months in 2020 off of MLB Network, which is, of course, owned by the MLB. So naturally, Manfred had some control there. He was held off the air for a few months in 2020 because of his criticism over Manfred and how he was handling the COVID pandemic with baseball. And then just recently, this past week, he ended up getting fired, supposedly for those same comments that he had made a couple of years prior. I think that it's kind of crazy that it's coming back to bite him now, even after how successful baseball was this past year, how it's on the upswing. And I think Ken Rosenthal's a big part of that. And I just don't really understand Manfred's choice. Obviously, it's his job. It's Rosenthal's job to criticize. He's a breaking, like he reports breaking news. He tweeted about it. He said that he still does have his jobs with The Athletic and Fox Sports, which is good news. We still get some Rosenthal. But he also said that he can confirm that MLB Network has, in fact, decided not to bring him back. He said he was grateful for the 12 years that he spent there and the enduring friends that he made along the way. He said that he always strove to maintain his journalistic integrity, and he thinks that his work reflected that. And honestly, can't agree more.
Yeah, I mean, I am on the same page as pretty much everybody that I've seen on the internet. Everyone is mad at Rob Manfred. Obviously, like you said, Ken Rosenthal also works for The Athletic, which is one of the bigger news sources that people pay for to read, including myself. I love his baseball pieces. I find them to be good constructive criticism for the MLB. It's really interesting to see what he says a lot of the time. And it's part of his job to critique the MLB. It's not a perfect league by any means. So if anything, Rob Manfred should be taking advice from him, I think, to see what could make the league better.
Honestly, totally agree. It's just, you know, we all know that Rob Manfred is prone to making rash decisions and not the best for the league. So we'll see how this pans out. Honestly, I think this could be a big step towards getting rid of Rob Manfred as the commissioner. I think that this is going to outrage a lot of people. And I think that it could push some over the edge. Maybe I'm not totally confident in that idea, but I think it's a possibility. I also just think that this is going to be another chip on the MLBPA's shoulders for the lockout conversation, because I know players love love Ken Rosenthal. So this could be another thing that they really push for in the negotiations. I think that's a distinct possibility.
And I know a lot of players have actually done interviews with Rosenthal for The Athletic. I read one from, I believe, Andrew Miller a few days ago, and a lot of the players might feel scared if they critique the league on The Athletic, how they might get suspended or something happen with them in that way.
Fined or something. It's a real possibility. Speaking of players in the MLBPA, just want to do a quick shout out to Astros pitcher Framber Valdez. I saw this on Instagram a few days ago, and I just wanted to give him a quick shout out. He's funding a construction project in his hometown in the Dominican Republic to fulfill a pledge that he made as a kid to help rebuild his hometown. And I just think that's really fantastic. So I thought this would be my platform to give him the shout out that I desperately think that he deserves. Good on him, and just go Framber Valdez, I guess.
Yeah, good stuff. It's always fun to see those stories from when players were kids and what they promised their hometowns and giving back. I know I watched David Ortiz do it for years, and how the people in the Dominican Republic love him. And I hope the same goes for Ember Valdez.
Yeah, they will be obviously appreciative of all the work that he's putting in to do that. So just had to give the quick shout out. Now on to our main event for the evening. It's a new year. Happy 2022 to everybody. And we're starting off the year the right way here at the Arm Barn, and we're bringing you all 30 teams' New Year's resolutions. Now I'm going to hand over the reins to Matt, because I think he's going to get us started with the AL East.
Yeah, so starting with the AL East, I'm going to start with my team, the Boston Red Sox. And the thing the Red Sox need to do is, after the lockout, they need to go out and get relief pitching. This is one of the more obvious ones, I think. You have a pretty good rotation with Sale, Valdi, Pivetta. You can put Hill in there. Paxton's going to come back. You got Waka. You got Houck. You got Whitlock. And those are some big names that, once again, might need the bullpen, and Houck and Whitlock, who had high leverage innings last year. So they need to get some back-end bullpen help. Matt Barnes blew up in the second half. I know you're going to have him back, but you don't know how reliable he's going to be. Same with a lot of their bullpen arms, and Darwinson Hernandez, Josh Taylor. They've seen flashes of greatness, but they're not reliably great.
And we all know how good the Sox are on offense, so the offense isn't going to be the issue.
Exactly. Now, moving on to the biggest rival of the Red Sox, the New York Yankees. I think what they need to do this offseason is spend smarter. And by that, I don't mean like staying under the luxury tax. I know that's never a problem for the Yankees, but it's more of the contracts they give. You got two relievers in Chapman and Britton who are making over $10 million a year, with Britton making 14 and Chapman making 18 this year. You got DJ LeMahieu, who's been was a good contract when you signed him, but he's still a 33-year-old third baseman for $15 million who doesn't have a lot of power anymore. If he can come back, bounce back this year, it's a solid contract, but still maybe a little bit overpaid. Stanton, you didn't get production out of him until last year. You're still paying him $29 million. I know they didn't give him that contract, but same with Severino, $11 million. Hicks, $10.5 million. With players like Judge and Gallo and Sanchez, who you're going to have to re-sign, you just need to spend smart this offseason so that you have money next year to give to those guys that are already in Yankees uniforms. Moving up to north of the border, the resolution I have for the Blue Jays is let your young players develop. They were one of the top teams in the AL East last year. And they had 90 wins. They didn't make playoffs, but still you got a young core in Bichette, Guerrero. You got a bunch of young outfielders with Gurriel. Santiago Espinal was pretty good last year. Biggio's still pretty young. It's a pretty young team. You still got a bunch of prospects with Jordan Groshans. You obviously want to go out there and win this year, but you got to let those young players develop, get playoff experience, and just go out there and do their thing, have fun playing.
And we got to take into account with the Blue Jays, they did pay big this offseason already to bring in some starting pitching in Gausman. So I could really see that being beneficial for them, giving them that ace to go along with their already ace in Hyunjin Ryu. And I think that those young players getting that playoff experience will be huge for the future, because if they can get it now, they won't need to worry about getting it later in the career and later in their World Series window. Now, moving on to my teams that I was given the pleasure of creating their New Year's resolutions, I'm starting off, of course, with my team, the Baltimore Orioles. They need to turn the top prospects and the top farm system in baseball into top players. We all know about Adley Rutschman, number one prospect according to the MLB pipeline. We also have another top 10 right-handed pitcher, top 10 prospect overall in the Orioles organization, Grayson Rodriguez, Gray Rod, love him. real big hurler, right-handed arms, stands 6'5", 220, huge and an electric pitcher. You move farther down the top 100 list in the pipeline, you have guys like DL Hall, a lefty pitcher, Gunnar Henderson, who just got drafted, who's a left side of the field infielder, and then Colton Cowser also in the top 100. The three of them are 72, 74, and 76 in the top 100. And the Orioles just need to turn these guys, these top prospects, these young studs into top players in the league. And maybe not all of them this year, but I could totally see Rutschman, Rodriguez, and Hall being up this year, getting them that experience, developing them into major league talents, and then being able to push that forwards for the next few years. And then, of course, we come to the last team in the AL East, the Tampa Bay, in quotation, Rays. And my resolution for them is just to actually move to Tampa Bay and play in Tampa Bay. They're not there right now, and they have remarkably low attendance for such a good team, and they just need to get out of St. Petersburg and actually be the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, moving on to the National League counterpart, we have the NL East, where I have the Phillies as the first team on my list. They just need to get back into the playoffs. They have good players. We were all scared about their bullpen this past year, but it honestly wasn't that bad. We saw guys bounce back this year from their off COVID seasons. The starting pitching is there. Nola is there. Wheeler was in the Cy Young race. They have the pieces. They have the MVP in Bryce Harper. They just need to get into the playoffs and give themselves a chance to win rather than shooting themselves in the foot by not even giving themselves a chance. And speaking of shooting themselves in the foot, the second team I'm going to talk about is the New York Mets. We all know the story of the Mets. They have the roster. The roster is way better this year with all of the offseason additions that we've talked about on previous episodes. They have the tools to win. It's just about not blowing up in the midseason. They led the NL East this past year for more than half the season and then missed the playoffs because of their midseason blow up. If they avoid that, they can be real contenders. And now the last team that I have in the National League East is the Nationals. They're a young rebuilding team at this point. We all know about Juan Soto. They have Key Boom behind the plate coming up. They have young hitting prospects. It's just about getting the starting pitching for them, and that's their New Year's resolution for me. It's just get the pitching, give yourselves a chance to win. You're a rebuilding team, but give those young guys the opportunity to play in bigger games and then move forward with that in the next few years.
Yeah, and continuing with the National League East, I'm going to start with my two teams. I'm going to start with the Braves. Their resolution is just to repeat. You got to bring back Freddie Freeman. You got Swanson coming back. You got Albies coming back. You got Riley coming back. Pretty much your whole outfield's coming back. You got Acuna coming back from injury, who's one of the top players in the league, and you just won the World Series without him. You got Freed, who's still young. Soroka is going to come back eventually. They have all the pieces still. They're going to add actually pieces, which is hard to say from a World Series team, but they're going to add even more pieces that were already on the team that were just hurt. They just got to come back and hopefully have a better regular season than they did last year when they stole it from the Mets in the last 60 games. But you got to come back and have that same postseason performance. And for the last NL East team, I have the Miami Marlins. And for them, it's just develop pitching. Last year, Edward Cabrera made his MLB debut. They got a lot of pitching prospects between Edward Cabrera, Max Meyer, Sixto Sanchez, Eury Pérez, Jake Eder, Dax Fulton. They got Braxton Garrett all in their top 11 prospects. They just have a lot of pitching prospects, and a lot of their pitchers on their actual roster are young. I know they just traded for Jesus Luzardo. It's just a young pitching team They have the prospects for hitting too, with Khalil Watson, who's their number one prospect, JJ Bleday. But if they can get that rotation to fill out and have five what seem to be top pitchers, they'll be one of the best teams in the NL East in a few years. Moving over to the AL Central, I'm going to start with the Minnesota Twins, and their resolution is to keep the guy they just signed to an extension healthy. Byron Buxton has played 7 years with the Twins, and only one of those years has he played over 100 games, and that was in 2017. He's a top player in the MLB when he's healthy. Last year in 61 games, he had 19 home runs and hit .306. He was looking like an all-star and potential MVP candidate before he got hurt. So he's won a gold glove before. He's one of the fastest players in the league, so he'll help you on the base paths. He's just a dynamic player, and they need to keep him healthy, even if it means a little less production out of him. For continuing in the AL Central, I got the Royals. And, of course, you got a lot happening there. We got Whit Merrifield, Salvi Perez, Adalberto Mondesi. But for them, I think it would be a big win if Bobby Witt Jr. wins Rookie of the Year. Before 2021, he was the number seven prospect coming into the season, and he didn't get called up. He's a top three prospect this year. He's only 21 years old. He's a great shortstop across AAA and AA last year. He played 123 games. He had 33 home runs, 35 doubles, a .290 batting average, and 29 stolen bases. Almost had a 30-30 season, 123 games across two leagues. I know it's the minors where the competition isn't as good, but he's one of the highest projected prospects in the league for a reason.
Now on to the other members of the AL Central. We have, of course, the Detroit Tigers, and I'm keeping it simple for them. Their future isn't quite here yet. They're not ready to make that push. So their New Year's resolution is just to get Miggy to 3K hits. He's just a few hits away in a month. Within a month of the season, he should be able to get it. And that's just what they should go for this year. It's going to be a huge accomplishment. It'll get them a lot of publicity, and they should really just make sure he gets there, because if they don't play him enough, people are going to be outraged. And moving right along, we have the White Sox. We know they're a good team. We know they have every tool imaginable. Sometimes I swear the guys that they have on their roster are robots. Like Luis Robert is a monster. Eloy Jimenez, a monster. Jose Abreu, I need not say anything about him because he's an MVP, and that speaks for itself. Tim Anderson, one of the most electric players in the league. Yoan Moncada, Grandal. You have great pitchers in Hendricks and Rodon, if he comes back, of course. But you also have the rest of that pitching staff, which had Cy Young candidates pretty much up and down it. But their resolution has just got to be to have fun while winning. They got marred in so much controversy this year because they were either having too much fun or Tony La Russa was ruining the vibe. Just have fun. We know they can win. They have a chance this year, and I think that they'll have a better one if they're focusing just on having fun. It's a game. I think a lot of us forget that all the time. But baseball's a game, and these guys get to play it. They should have fun while they do it. And into the last team in the AL Central, we have the newly rebranded Cleveland Guardians. No controversy with the naming anymore. That lawsuit has been settled. With them, they have the youth and the pitching prospects. You have guys like Tristan McKenzie. We have a Cy Young winner in Shane Bieber. Cal Quantrill, we know Class A, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, Emmanuel Class A. He's a Rookie of the Year candidate this past year. Honestly, could have won, but just because he's a relief arm, he didn't. Older guys like Anthony Gose coming up throwing 100. I remember him, he used to be a outfielder, but now he's a pitcher throwing absolute ched. But I'm mentioning so many pitchers. it seems like the only person that they have on offense is Jose Ramirez. And not to say he's not a fantastic player, because he is. He's been an MVP candidate year after year, but they need to add bats to that lineup. They can win with bats in that lineup. And I could see them bringing back guys like Eddie Rosario, who just had an incredible postseason with the Braves. The Guardians had just signed him this past year, and I think that would be a good addition to their outfield and just to get some bats in the lineup. Now, moving across to the National League again, we have the National League Central, where I have the Brewers. They need hitters to complement Christian Yelich and to complement that staff, really. We know Corbin Burns is filthy. We know a lot of those guys that they have coming out of the pen, like Devin Williams and Josh Hader, are nasty. They just need more bats around Christian Yelich, some consistent bats. And I think they got that in Hunter Renfro. I think that could be a big plus for them, but they just need to add some more bats to complement the rest of their team and hopefully get them some real big wins in this upcoming 2022 season. And then we have the Reds as my next team. The Reds need to figure out their bullpen. It's as simple as that. They had a pretty gosh darn good bullpen just a few years ago. I remember that pretty clearly. Guys like Raisel Iglesias and Archie Bradley were a part of it. Mike Lorenzen this season left. Those guys were nasty. And now Lorenzen and Iglesias are with the Angels. Archie Bradley is gone. And this past 2021 season, they had a collective bullpen ERA of 4.99, almost a 5 ERA out of the bullpen. We know they have the bats. Jesse Winker was a revelation this past year. Castellanos showed us what he could do. Eugenio Suarez, we know, hits tanks. They have the Punisher in their lineup. They have the lineup. They have a pretty decent set of starting pitchers. But that bullpen needs some help.
Yeah. Moving right along to the Pirates, if you remember the glory days, so to say, of the 2010s and 2013, 2014, they had Andrew McCutchen, Starling Marte, Gregory Polanco, Garrett Cole, all these stars to cheer for. And recently they haven't had a lot to cheer for or talk about. So my resolution for them, get Brian Hayes to the All-Star game. He's a player that they took in the first round in 2015. He's going into his age 25 season. He came in sixth in Rookie of the Year voting in 2020. He only played 96 games in 2021 due to injury. You need to get him out there, keep him healthy. He was one of the top prospects before he got called up in 2020. He's got not play many games, like. He could be a star. He's a great fielder. He's got a memorable name. You just need to get people to come out to the park and put some players out on the field that can put up a good fight against some of these better teams, so to say. The Pirates were one of the worst teams in the league last year. They have been for a few years now. Just got to keep getting players that put fans in seats and make other free agents want to come and play for them. Moving along, Chicago Cubs. This one's a little bit of a stretch, but with the way they added Marcus Stroman and the rumors behind Carlos Correa, their New Year's resolution for me is to win the division. I know NL Central is really tough. You got the Cardinals, you got the Reds. They've got some good teams that they're going to have to beat to get past. The Brewers were really good last year. You got some good teams you're going to have to beat to get past, but you got a pretty good rotation starting with Stroman, Hendricks, and Miley, who all had pretty good years. Alec Mills is a pretty good 4 or 5 starter. You have one more starter, so that rotation is pretty good. The bullpen could use some help. I know you got Cody Hewer and Rowan Wick. They're solid, but you definitely need a closer to come back and for the back end of your bullpen. But their lineup is pretty solid. You got Wilson Contreras and Yan Gomes, who will probably split time behind the plate. Frank Schwindel had a pretty good year in first base after Anthony Rizzo got traded. Madrigal is going to come back from injury. You got Patrick Wisdom at third, who's shown to be a power bat and did really well after coming up last year. Horner will play shortstop. Outfield, you got Hayward, who's been there, good veteran. Ian Happ, who's a switch-hitting left fielder. Rafael Ortega is a good defensive center fielder, but you could add a little bit more there. But I think a few additions to the Cubs or a few prospect call-ups, and they could be a contender for the division this year. With the final NL Central team, I have the St. Louis Cardinals. And my resolution for them is to get reliable starting pitching. Last year, they had the lineup. You got Molina, Goldschmidt, Edmund, Arenado, DeJong at shortstop. Tyler O'Neill and Harrison Bader came into their own. Dylan Carlson and Lars Nootbaar were good in right field, two good young outfielders. But they struggled with starting pitching. Wainwright was pretty good all year, but you can't rely on him. He's getting up there in age. Flaherty has always been a second-half pitcher, and that's if he stays healthy. Miles Mikolas, we've seen flashes of greatness from him, but not over the course of a full season. They did get Steven Matz. He's pretty good, but I don't know if you can rely on him as much. They just need starting pitching that's just as reliable, that they can know that once every 5 days, they'll get a win. So moving in to the West Division, starting off with the AL. For the A's, I think they just need to sign Matt Olson to an extension. I know there's been trade talks about him. If you sign to an extension, you might get a little more value for him. But he's been one of their best players over the past 6 years. 2021 was his first All-Star game. But in 6 years, he has 142 home runs. He's averaging 40 a year. He only hits 252, but he has an on-base percentage in the 350s. He has an OPS over 900 last year. He's one of the best defensive first basemen in the league. Left-handed hitter, always adds value. He's played over 100 games every year since 2018. He played all 162 in 2018, 127 in 2019, all the 60 games in 2020, and 156 last year. So he's a durable guy. You don't really got to worry about injuries. But you got to make sure that you either, if you want to compete, you stick on to him, you hold him around. If you want to trade him, I think even extension would add a little more value to him. He's only 27 years old. You could still build around him even if you wanted to rebuild. I think he's one of the players that can turn a franchise around. And speaking of turning franchises around, that's what another AL West team looks to do in the Texas Rangers. They signed Marcus Semien and Corey Seager to the middle infield, and it looks like they need to compete again. Obviously, their starting pitching isn't the best. They have John Gray as their ace, and after that, it's Dane Dunning, Colby Auer, John King, a lot of players that people haven't heard of. Spencer Howard's a good young arm that they have, but I don't know if he's ready to be in the bullpen. I mean, in the rotation. Same with relievers. You don't got a lot there, so you got to add on to there. But they have the bats to be a good team. You got Nate Lowe was a good first baseman. So like I said, Semien and Seager is a good it's one of the best middle infield combos in the league. They have Adolis Garcia, who came up last year and lit the world on fire. Cole Calhoun's a good veteran to have. Willie Calhoun's another good player that they had last year. They have a good roster, and I could see them competing for the AL West title next year with the Astros losing Correa. You got the A's, who seem to be losing a lot of steam. The Angels weren't doing too hot last year after the Mike Trout injury. I think it's a division that the Rangers could steal.
Yeah, and you got to remember, the Rangers still have a lot of cap space left to spend, so you could see them going out and signing some arms. I know that I'm still of the belief that Kershaw's going home to Texas to head up that staff, joining Corey Seager. I think they could still make some moves at the end of the lockout and really bolster that team to make it look like even not even possible competition for the division, but I think they could – with a few good moves, they could look like favorites. And speaking of favorites, we're going to talk about everybody's least favorite team in the Astros now. They just need to get past the controversy. It's they've been trying to do it for years, and it's starting to get a little better for them. With guys like Correa probably on the way out, the heat will be less so on the Astros. Obviously, everybody is hating on Altuve, but they can definitely get past this, and I think that should be their focus. Obviously, they're going to compete. They don't need to worry about that as much. We've seen them in the World Series and put up a hell of a fight. So they just need to get past this controversy and restart their image. Speaking of restarting their image, the Mariners need to get to the playoffs. That's all I got to say. They are looked at as a laughingstock. It doesn't matter how hot they start the season. They always find a way to miss the playoffs, and now everybody's rooting for them. They brought in the Cy Young winner in Robbie Ray. They're ready to compete, and they will need to make the playoffs to prove a point. They have the bats. They have the pitchers. Maybe a few more moves to bolster the rest of that rotation and bullpen, but they are ready to make a run at the playoffs, and this is the year that they should do it. Speaking of a run at the playoffs, again, the AL West was pretty self-explanatory, I think, for most of these teams. And with the Angels, it's the same thing. They need a win with Mike Trout. He's the best player in the world. He's still in his prime. Obviously, the injuries have hampered them a little bit. But with Ohtani, with Fletcher, with guys like Syndergaard coming in free agency, they need to win, and they need to win now. Because if they don't, they're just going to lose so much time, because Trout has been there and he's been the best player. He's won MVPs. Ohtani's even won MVPs. I think they have the pieces to finally do it, but I've thought that every year. So the Angels just need to make that run and win with Trout in the prime. And we're just going to jump right over to their Los Angeles counterparts in the Dodgers. They also need to just win a World Series. Like, there's not much else to say about them. They have the money, they have the players. Obviously, they lost Seager, but that probably won't slow them down very much. They just need to win a World Series again. That's what they should be striving for, and I'm pretty sure that's what they're striving for. And the last team that I have in the NL West is the San Francisco Giants. And for me, their resolution has got to just be repeat the 2021 regular season success. They were the winningest team in baseball this past season. They snatched the division out of the Dodgers' hands. They beat up on the Padres throughout the year. They were an electric and fun team. Posey winning comeback player of the year. Of course, he retired, but they can make another run like that, I feel, and their resolution for me has just got to be to repeat that success that they had.
Moving right along to the Rockies, I actually have an interesting resolution for them, and for me, it's to re-sign Trevor Story. They made a big surprise at the trade deadline this year when they decided not to trade him, and it looked like they were going to try and build around him, and they took a gamble. And I know he's been rumored to go more to the Yankees or the Red Sox, or he's been rumored to go to a lot of teams, but I still think the Rockies are going to try and re-sign him. There's no way that they didn't trade him for anything when they knew he was just going to walk. So I think they need to re-sign him after the lockout and try and build around him. Moving right along to a little south more is the Diamondbacks. And for them, they just need to get younger. I mean, looking at their roster, you got a lot of solid players, but they're old. Zach Gallen's already 26. Gilbert, who threw a no-hitter, is 28. Merrill Kelly's 33. Just a lot of their pitchers are really old. Carson Kelly, who's their starting catcher, is 27. Nick Ahmed, who's been there for a while, is 31. Their first baseman's in Luplo is 28, and Pavin Smith's already 25. Christian Walker's 30. You got Josh Rojas in the hot corner, who's 27. Ketel Marte's 28. They're just a team. David Peralta's 34. They're just a team that they're not competing, and they don't need all these veterans to help them with the playoff push. They just need to get younger and rebuild. And for the last team, I left the San Diego Padres. They came out and they looked like they were going to compete for the World Series and compete for an NLS crown. And they came in third behind the Giants and the Dodgers. And a lot of people saw the season as a disappointment, but I saw it as a setback. You had a lot of injuries. All six of your starters got hurt at some point. Denelson Lamet kept getting hurt so much that he got moved to the bullpen. But Darvish was out for a little bit. Snell was out. Musgrove. Clevinger was out all year. Paddock spent some time. You just got a lot of injuries in the rotation. Never mind, Austin Nola only played like 50 games. I know Tatis was hurt for a lot of the year, which you need to make sure you keep him healthy. Even their backup shortstop, who they just signed last year, Kim, got hurt, which opened up a door for Cronenworth, which is good. But they still need to make sure they're staying healthy, keeping their guys healthy so they can stay on the field and win them games.
Yeah, they definitely disappointed some people. We were all expecting a Tatis MVP season, a World Series MVP from him too. We expected that rotation to be absolutely filthy, and everybody went down just as soon as they showed up to San Diego. I remember being in awe of that rotation at the beginning of the year, seeing Darvish, seeing Snell now in that rotation, seeing Clevinger get traded there. There were so many good arms, and I think we only saw maybe Snell really stay through most of the season with any sort of consistency. And they're a fun team to watch, so I really hope that they can stay healthy. And sticking in the NL West, actually, our first team for today's Rushmore is an NL West team that Matt just talked about, and that's the Colorado Rockies. So again, we've had a lot of these recently, very young franchises where on Baseball Reference, they only have a top 12 players in WAR instead of a top 24 because of how young of a franchise it is. The Rockies have only been around for 29 seasons. 1993 was their first season in the league. So there's a few, there's not as many choices as with most other teams like the Twins that we did, or the Pirates even. That was a tough one for us to decide because of all of the good names there. But the Rockies, I'll start it off with a guy that I talk about on here so often, Mr. Rocky himself, the Todd father, Todd Helton. There's not much else that needs to be said besides for he's Todd Helton. 17 years, all with the Rockies. He was second in Rookie of the Year voting. He had a year where he led the league, the entire majors, in batting average with .372 in 2000. Only a five-time All-Star and four-time Silver Slugger, but that really doesn't put into perspective how good of a player he was. He still won three Gold Gloves. He had a batting title, like I mentioned. He leads the Rockies in position player WAR, offensive WAR. He's near the top of the list. He's second in on-base percentage. He's in the top 10 in slugging. He's first all-time in games played, almost by double. Next on the list, who's Charlie Blackmon, who's played just under 1,300 games, while Todd Helton's played 2,200 games for them. 7,900 career at-bats, which is first in the franchise, first in runs scored, first in hits, first in home runs, first in doubles, total bases, RBIs, walks, runs created. He's the guy in the Rockies organization, and he always has been. So that's why he's got to be there for me.
Yeah, definitely. He's one of the best hitters in Rockies history. Like you just said, he leads the Rockies in most offensive categories. So 17 years in all in Colorado, like you said, lifetime Rocky, always adds a little more to the Mount Rushmore. But yeah, I have Todd Helton on mine as well.
And let me just be clear, in every episode, I will mention that Todd Helton deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Get him in the Hall of Fame. Speaking of the Hall of Fame, the next player on the Rushmore just recently got in, and that's Larry Walker. I mean, again, not a lot needs to really be said. he had a 17-year career, 10 of those years with the Rockies, probably his best years also. He won an MVP with them in 97 when he had a on-base plus slugging of 1.172 that year, led the league in total bases with 409. He had 49 bombs and 46 doubles that season. And in his career with the Rockies, I mean, 334 career average in 10 years, a 618 slugging percentage, a career OPS of over 1,000. He had 258 home runs with them and 848 RBIs. He was a true player in his position. He was a good fielder. He has several gold gloves to his name. I mean, he was fast too. He stole bases. He's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. Three batting titles in his career, and he's most notable for being a Rocky. So obviously he's got to be there too.
Yep. Larry Walker, like you said, number retired. Second all time for the Rockies in home runs. He's all time in batting average, on base percentage, slugging, on base percentage. I mean, OPS, OPS plus, won an MVP. He was just an all around player, five gold gloves, three silver sluggers, and like one of the few, maybe the only, don't actually know, Hall of Famers for the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah. And just to put into perspective, he had 258 career home runs, which is second all time in the Rockies organization. And he only played the 10 years. That's 26 pretty much home runs a season for the Rockies. Those are numbers you can't really argue with. And speaking of you can't argue with, another guy that I feels pretty obvious for this young Rockies organization is one of the best fielders of all time, third baseman Nolan Arenado. Look, he's first all-time in defensive war for them with a defensive war of 15.6. He's also third in total war, as he's fourth in offensive war. His bat was just phenomenal, and somehow better than his bat was his glove. I mean, platinum gloves. We know he's a fantastic fielder. He has five platinum gloves in his career, nine gold gloves, six all-stars, and four silver sluggers, most of which being with the Rockies, considering he's only played 1 year without them. He was just fantastic. In his time with the Rockies, 235 bombs in only 8 years, 760 RBIs in that span. He had a couple years, he had 3 years back-to-back of 130 plus RBIs, a career 293 hitter in Colorado. Obviously, gotta be there. Nolan Arenado is pretty synonymous with the Rockies for kids our age.
Yeah, he's the face, one of the faces, one of two, I would argue, which I believe the last one's my last Mount Rushmore, but we'll get into him later. But Arenado, first in defensive war, like you said, 8 years in Colorado and eight gold gloves. I believe he's the only player ever to start his year, like start his career off with a gold glove in each of his first eight seasons. He finished third, fourth, fifth, and sixth in MVP voting in different years. So he's was a player in Colorado that everyone was scared to face, especially in Coors. He not only was one of the best hitters, like you said, but one of the best fielder. So definitely one of the top players in Rockets history.
Yeah. And so with my last Rushmore pick, I had a little bit of trouble. Obviously, it's not always easy to decide. I was between two guys. One of them would be my honorable mention, and one of them would be my last name on the Rushmore. But I had to go with the guy that I think of very highly. One of the smoothest lefty swings I've ever seen in my life. I remember seeing videos of his bat drops in Coors Field when he just sent missiles over that right field wall. It's cargo, Carlos Gonzalez, the Venezuelan. Three-time All-Star, three-time Gold Glove, two-time Silver Slugger, and a batting title, all with the Rockies. He played 12 years. I'm not sure if he's actually retired yet, but he hasn't played since 2019. But he played 10 of his 12 pro seasons with the Rockies. He won a batting title with them in a year where I always argued that he should have won the MVP. He came in third that season. He had a gold glove, a silver slugger that year, finished third in MVP voting with a 336 batting average, led the MLB in total bases, nearly had 200 hits that season in 2010. He was always a guy that was putting up 30-20 seasons with 30-plus bombs, 20-plus stolen bases. 2015, he even put 40 bombs over the fence and won a Silver Slugger that season. He's one of the guys that I just immediately think of when I think of the Rockies. So that's why I had to put Cargo there in my fourth and final Rushmore spot.
So I had Cargo as my honorable mention, and it's because I see Troy Tulowitzki as he's the first person I think of when I think of the Colorado Rockies. Spent 10 years there. He had 5 All-Stars, 2 Gold Gloves, 2 Silver Sluggers. He came in 5th in MVP voting twice. He came in 2nd Rookie of the Year voting. He's 4th all-time in offensive war, and he was the first in defensive war for the Rockies before Nolan Arenado came strolling around. He's one of the best defensive shortstops to play the game. He obviously didn't spend his whole career there. He went to Toronto for a little bit before his career got derailed with injuries, which makes him one of the more forgettable stars of the late 2000s and early 2010s. But I think he is one of the best hitters in Rockies history. He had that weird stance that I'll never forget where he twirled the bat around his head, like almost like a snake with how fast he would turn it to compare it. He would go like 2 slow ones and a fast one. It was a weird stance that somehow works. Like I said, one of the best fielders in Rockies history. He's just the face of the Rockies at one of the hardest positions on the field, and I had to put him on there.
Yeah, so with Tulo, it was between Tulo and Cargo for me. Both played at pretty much the exact same time with the Rockies. And Tulo obviously deserves to be mentioned here. He is my honorable mention, as I said. The 5 All-Stars, 2 Gold Gloves, 2 Silver Sluggers. I could see the Rockies considering retiring his number, honestly. The guy was fantastic. Had a few years where he was just really that guy in 2014, finished the year with a 340 batting average. Obviously, he didn't play that entire season. He only played 91 games because of injury. But he was on pace to have an MVP season that year, and he still was voted got a few votes for the MVP that year, finished 25th, but only playing 91 games. That's pretty impressive. He's a guy that you automatically think of. Between Arenado, Cargo, and Tulo, those are all guys that as soon as you say Rockies that are coming to mind. So that's why Tulo had to be my honorable mention.
And moving right along, we actually have another really young franchise out of the AL East this time with the Toronto Blue Jays. I'll take it right away. My first guy, actually, I didn't even realize how much he led the Blue Jays in because I remember him with another team later in his career, but it's Carlos Delgado. He played 12 years in Toronto, 2 All-Stars. He was a runner-up for MVP voting, 3 Silver Sluggers, which may not seem like the most amount of hardware a player could get, but he's the Blue Jays leader in offensive war, slugging, on-base percentage, plate appearances, runs, total bases, doubles, homers, RBIs, walks, intentional walks. He's pretty much the Blue Jays leader in all the important offensive categories. And I didn't realize how good he was with the Blue Jays until I dove deep into his stats.
Yeah, Carlos Delgado, another guy that was easy for me to decide was on my list. He was so good, and he's weirdly one of the first guys that I think of with the Blue Jays because I think probably because of Backyard Baseball, the video game, because he was so good in it. But you just got to look at his at the Blue Jays leaders in batting stats. Like you said, he's up there at number one on most of those. And if he's not number one, he's somewhere in the top 10 for the most part. The OPS is really what stood out to me. The guy isn't even top 10 in career batting average with them, with the Blue Jays, but he's number one in OPS because his slugging was just that good. And he was also a guy that took a lot of walks, which bumps up his OBP for sure. And he is also second all time in games played, just a few behind Tony Fernandez for the Blue Jays. And that's why he's there for both of us, obviously.
Continuing right along, I got a player who recently retired, and he was a little bit of a journeyman at the end of his career, but most of his time was spent in Toronto, and it's Jose Bautista. He spent 10 years in Toronto, 6 All-Star appearances, 3 Silver Sluggers, finished 3rd, 4th, 6th, and 8th in MVP voting, and of course, the bat flip heard around the world during the ALDS in 2015. He's the all-time position player leader for WAR for the Blue Jays. No, he's just the face of the Blue Jays for kids our age.
Yeah, I mean, Jose was that guy. You were scared to face him. And a thing that I think has really been underappreciated about Jose Bautista's career has got to be his eye when he's at the plate. I mean, wow, could that guy take a pitch? In 2011, his season where he finished highest in MVP voting at 3rd, he had 43 home runs, 103 RBIs, finished the year with a 302 average, but his OBP was 447 because he took 132 walks that season. That is incredible. And I think it's a really underappreciated part of his game. It ended up bumping his OPS to tops in the league that year. He also got intentionally walked 24 times because who would want to face the guy that hit 54 bombs the year before? But easily for me, it was easy to decide that Jose Bautista was going to be up on the Rushmore for the Blue Jays.
Most definitely. And next, I have the first pitcher we're actually going to talk about on the day. And that for me is Roy Halladay. He spent 12 years in Toronto. He had 6 All-Stars. He had a Cy Young. He was a runner-up for Cy Young. Hall of Famer. Leads the Blue Jays in wins, walks per 9, Ks per walk. He's arguably one of the best pitchers of our generation. I know he spent some time with the Phillies, that people know him for his World Series there, but he was his best in Toronto.
Oh, for sure. You can't deny it. The guy was so good. One of my favorite pitchers growing up. Obviously, he hit his prime just a little before I really got into being a baseball fan, but I still got to see him win that Cy Young in 2010. I got to see him win the World Series with the Phillies, but boy, oh boy, was he good with the Blue Jays. He has the Cy Young there as well. He was a workhorse, had in the 2003 season ended up pitching 266 innings with 9 complete games and 2 shutouts, both led the American League. The complete games actually led the entire MLB. I think that it's pretty undeniable. Hall of Famer, rest in peace, but he's easy on the list for me.
Yes, for sure. No. The last person on this Rushmore, and the honorable mention, could go many ways. For me, my last person spent 7 years in Toronto, has 2 World Series championships in 92 and 93, 5 All-Star appearances, 2 Silver Sluggers, finished 3rd in MVP voting, but he's most well known for hitting a home run that walked off the World Series. And my last player is Joe Carter.
You can't deny Joe Carter his spot here because it's the most iconic moment in Blue Jays history. And it still gives me chills to listen to that call and watch that ball travel. Joe Carter obviously deserves to be mentioned here. I actually didn't have him on my Rushmore because he just, you know, he was at his best, but the 7 years in Toronto, and I know I'm going to contradict myself by saying that because of my next pick for the Rushmore that you haven't mentioned yet, but Joe Carter, he was a journeyman, and he was fantastic, but because of a couple of reasons, which I'll get to in a moment, is why he had to be my honorable mention. Now, Matt, I'll let you do your honorable mention first, and then I'll go back and tell you who my last guy on the Rushmore is.
Sounds perfect. So my honorable mention is going to be one of the few relievers we actually talk about in the Mount Rushmores. And I actually have Tom Henke as my honorable mention. He had 8 years in Toronto and had an all-star appearance. He was a big part of the World Series. He was the shutdown closer. And he won a Reliever of the Year award in Toronto. And I think he's just one of the more underappreciated players in Blue Jays history. He's up in the top of a lot of Blue Jays pitching stats, which he was a reliever, so he didn't have as many opportunities as maybe a starter would with batters faced. So it was an easy decision when I kept seeing his name pop up over and over again in Blue Jays leaderboards.
Yeah, that's actually a pick I was kind of weirdly expecting from you. I know you like to go with some weird ones for these honorable mentions, so I figured you were going to pull something different. And it was a name that I was actually looking at. I did not include him on my list, but definitely a good shout there for your honorable mention. Now, there's one guy that we haven't mentioned that deserves his time, who is my fourth name on the face of the Rushmore, and that is the Puerto Rican product, Roberto Alomar. Now, I know that I did just say that Joe Carter's only 7 years in Toronto kind of pushed me to put him on the honorable mentions. And yes, Roberto Alomar played less years in Toronto. He only played five, but there's a couple reasons as to why I had to put him here. Number one is he is second all time in batting average for the Blue Jays. He's also sixth in offensive war, where even though Joe Carter played more years, Alomar is still ahead of him there. The position player war, of course, he is higher there as well. His OPS is also top 10 for the Blue Jays all time. And another reason that I had to give him the nudge ahead of Joe Carter is because Joe Carter doesn't have his number retired in Toronto, but Alomar does. And that really was the factor that pushed me over the edge for it, to put Alomar on the top instead of Joe Carter. In Alomar's first 3 years with the Jays, he finished sixth in MVP each of those years, won a gold glove each of those years, was an all-star in every single year he played in Toronto, as well as a gold glove every year he was in Toronto. He won a silver slugger even in 92. His career batting average with the Jays above 300 at 307. Obviously, his slugging percentage at 451 isn't the most impressive, but the on-base percentage at 382, 206 career stolen bases with them, 342 RBIs, over 300 walks in only 5 years. He's a Hall of Famer, deservedly so, and that's the number getting retired is really what talked to me and said, Ezra, you gotta put him on top of the Rushmore. And a guy that I know neither of us mentioned, but I will give a quick shout out to, is Dave Steeb. He is first all time in career war for the Blue Jays. Played 15 of his 16 years there. One of those years barely really counts, considering he only played in 19 games and was 40 coming off of 4 years of not playing. But as a pitcher, and being number one all time in your team's career war, that's gotta be of note. He won an ERA title with the Blue Jays. Again, another workhorse. So I have to give him his due time. But I just had everybody else that we had already mentioned just a little bit ahead of Dave Steeb, but gotta give him a little bit of a shout out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that will wrap up episode 6 of the Armband. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Happy New Year. Thank you all. And please stay safe out there. It's getting a little crazy.
Yeah, for sure. Make sure to follow at Armbarn Pod on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok for baseball content and graphics about what we just discussed. So yeah. Thank you again, and
have a good one.